STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
All right, friends, Greg Kokel here, Stand to Reason. Really like that new music. I'm getting in the groove here with that. And this is, of course, Stand to Reason, and I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to spend this time with you. And in the second hour of our podcast this week, I'll be taking your calls and your comments, and we'll be interacting just a little bit. This first hour, though, I get to spend with one of my absolutely favorite people in the world, Mr. Sean McDowell. Sean.
Oh, Greg, good to have you. That's the kindest introduction. I appreciate you saying that. And I do like the music, and I like that you've kept the rooster in there. That's
oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, you got to have the rooster. I agree. By the way, I said, Mr. Sean, I should call you Dr. Sean McDowell, but to be honest with you, I still can't get used to that title.
You know what? I can't get used to you calling me doctor because you're still not only a friend but a mentor. So Sean is great with
me. Okay. Well, I also thank you, Sean. And I was just thinking, you're the only PhD I know with a faux hawk. So you still have it, I imagine.
I do, yeah. I don't know when it's going to go away. My kids are like, Dad, you turned 40, you have a PhD. I'm like, I know, it just...
You know what? It's your hair is just forever fixed in that shape now. I don't think you're ever going to be able to train it otherwise.
It might be because I'm a 5'9 basketball player with a faux hawk. I'm nearing 6 feet.
There you go.
Maybe it's some subconscious thing.
It's height envy or something, yeah.
It might be.
Well, just for those of you who don't recognize the name, and I don't know who that would be, but Sean is now... Mr. Dr. Sean McDowell, Professor of Christian Apologetics at Biola University. Are you still doing the work at the high school, Sean? A little bit here, a little bit there?
Yeah, I still work part-time with students. I teach an honors Bible class. I actually teach three mornings a week.
Uh-huh.
And it just keeps me knowing what students are thinking. And like Brett Kunkel, my heart is really the next generation.
Right.
So I'm keeping that up.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. That makes a demand on your schedule because Biola's is kind of a drive from where you're at out down there in South Orange County. So, but I'm glad you're doing it. Also, authored, co-authored, or edited more than 15 books, and we'll be talking about some of those today, the ones that you've had your hand in as a project. But that includes the updated, soon-to-be-published Evidence That Demands a Verdict, updated version, and of course that's the book that your dad wrote so many years when I was a brand new Christian 43 years ago. That was probably the first apologetics book that I ever got.
Wow.
And I devoured it. You weren't even a gleam in your dad's eye at that and I devoured it. It was tremendous, and there was a whole generation of us that cut our apologetics teeth on your dad's book, and your dad is still a powerful force, and I guess this is an updated version. We're going to be talking about this in September, right?
Yep, I'm coming back on because that releases early October, and that's been a whirlwind of a project, but I can't wait for it to come out. We've got a whole launch team, people getting excited about
yeah.
it. So I think we're going to rejuvenate that brand for a new generation.
Yeah, well, that's great. I just can't imagine the amount of work it must have been to have to go through that tome, that massive tome, and bring it all up to date and then, and refresh it and add new things because there are new challenges we're facing now 40 or 45 years. What was the publication date of that book?
Oh, gosh, I think it was originally 1972 that it first came out. But even before that, he had put some of it in, like, smaller pamphlets.
Yeah, booklets.
And just sold his notes, made them available to people.
Uh-huh.
So well, it's been a long time.
Yeah, that was 1 year before I became a Christian. So anyway, we'll get to that in September. But now we're talking about, and I'm just amazed at you. I mean, you got not only a PhD, but you got two masters, philosophy of religion and theology, and also in theology from Talbot, summa cum laude. I mean, so you're always at it, Sean. You got more energy than I could ever imagine or muster for myself now at 67, but I'm glad you're out there doing it. And it seems like every time I turn around, there's another book with your name on it in some capacity, either as the author or co-author or as editor. So I'm looking right now at the Apologetic Study Bible that Holman published. And I guess this is a new edition. I want to talk with you about that. And yep. Also a new study tool that's called the Advocate's Bible Study. And in that's something that you had a significant hand in apparently developing and advancing. So we'll talk about both of those things here, okay?
Awesome.
Okay, so the Apologetic Study Bible, when I saw it first, I thought, hey, our guys contributed to that. I think I contributed to that. But then I realized it's not this one. It's the student version, right?
That's right.
So there's actually two in play.
So the Apologetic Study Bible first came out in 2008. And then the president of Brodmann & Holman at that time, he and I started having a conversation about a student version.
Mm-hmm.
And once I heard about the possibility, I thought, are you kidding me? This is awesome. Why didn't I think of this earlier?
Yeah.
And so that came out in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And then quite obviously, even just since 2010, in the last 7 years, there's a lot of cultural changes that in this update we needed to address.
Okay, so this now, what we're talking about here, is the Apologetic Study Bible by Holman, which is an updated version of the one that came out about 10 or so years ago. And let's just talk about a lot of people they've never heard of this kind of thing, Sean. So this is a kind of a study Bible with an emphasis on apologetics. Could explain what the project really represents?
Yeah, so at first, let me take a step back. At first, the Apologetic Study Bible was written with a lot of scholars, Gary Habermas, William Lane Craig, with massive study notes in the bottom, and I would guess about 100 and 120 of the biggest questions people were asked, and they were kind of put as individual articles through the Bible.
Right.
It's a great tool, but a typical high school or even certainly junior high or high school student or even a layperson might not pick it up because it had a very academic feel to it,
mm-hmm.
which it should, even though it simplified a lot of the books that you and I often read.
Right, and these guys are popular writers most of many ways, so they know how to speak to a popular audience.
They do. They do. So that's a wonderful resource that Ted Cable and my professors at Southern Baptist put together.
Uh-huh.
And then we said, how do we take this, tailor it, adapt it, tweak it so it fits with students.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first time I invited Brett over, I invited Eric Johnson over, a couple other friends, and I said, would you guys be willing to come over? I've got this opportunity to create a study Bible for students with apologetics,
mm-hmm.
and help me dream, brainstorm, just come up with ideas that this would be one single tool we could put in the hands of students, in the hands of parents, that just answers some of their toughest questions.
Right. So you, as Brett would put it, you youthetized it.
Yeah, we didn't euthanize it. We
euthanized it, right.
And
right.
We did that in a few ways. Like the study notes, we kind of trimmed down the study notes at the bottom of the page. And these are all study notes distinctly related to apologetic questions that come up in the text through the entire Bible. So we just trimmed them down, maybe half or a third for students.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took the articles of very different lengths. And I said, we're going to have one-page articles the same length. We're going to have substance in here, but I want stories, I want examples, I want it written in a way that a student will find interesting, and it just resonates kind of with their mind
mm-hmm.
and with their hearts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we just added these other features, which are really cool. So some of the features we came up with, for example, are called Fast Facts that our mutual friend Jason Carlson did.
Oh,
we got
no
about
kidding. I just got an email I just got an email from Jason today. Yeah,
oh, you
I
did.
Didn't know he was involved in this. This is great. Yeah. They're
yeah.
doing tactics at their church in the Minneapolis St. Paul area, and he's all excited about the new tactics study guide that came out from Zondervan and
good.
Apparently they're employing it. I didn't read the whole email. I didn't have time to. I had to get here and talk to you, but I just noticed it came in. So I did not know that Jason was involved with this. This is great.
Yep. So Jason did what's called the Fast Facts, where we got about 20, 25 areas such as like reincarnation, the Bible verse, the Quran, and in little sidebars in the Bible, there's like 5 key facts that people can know about those topics.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason did that. Brett did a
By
section.
The way, before you get to Brett, just one other note about Jason. The biggest contribution that I made to Jason's life, and he'll tell you this, has nothing to do with anything spiritual. I taught him how to bass fish. I really did. You know, took him and his brother out a couple of times in my boat in northern Wisconsin, and now he's a real good fisherman. So anyway, he's also a fisherman of men, and that's the most important thing. So and he's made that contribution. So what did Brett do?
So Brett, we came up with a feature, we call it Tactics, because we didn't want to just put, and it makes sense, you know, working with Stan DeRees and, and the work that you had done, and he had youthatized that, where we didn't want the Bible just to be answers. We wanted students to read it, and while they're reading it, understand how we come to those answers.
Right.
So he got a whole bunch of examples of these, and I think there's 25 or 30 spread throughout the Bible, such as Christians are hypocritical, all religions are basically the same, and he answers them briefly, but teaches a tactic that hopefully a student will remember and know how to apply that tactic in the future when a different kind of objection comes up.
So these are kind of little snippets that are very accessible, very digestible, and kind of gets right to the heart of the matter fairly quickly.
Absolutely. These are like a sidebar that might be a quarter of a page, or at most, you know, a third of a page.
Right.
That just economically gets to the heart of the issue.
Right. I know, I remember writing a piece for the Student Bible. All our guys did. Brett did. Alan did. This was before Tim was on board, of course. But and I thought it was great because they had so much to offer, but they hadn't made kind of a public, a contribution, a written contribution in this kind of venue up until that time. And so this gave them an opportunity to get published in a venue with a tome, a volume, where a lot of people were going to benefit from the tremendous things that they had to offer. And I was just thrilled to see that. And I got one shot. You know, I think I did a thing on theistic evolution, but it was one of those things you guys were really demanding. You know, I had a really tight word count.
Yep.
It had to really work, and it had to be understandable, had to be substantive and accessible at the same time. So I was happy to make the contribution, and also just thrilled that there were so many other people that were stepping up, like our guys and many others, making apologetics accessible to young people in a study Bible format. That was fabulous.
Well, we did get Tim Barnett to contribute, and Amy Hall also did one. Yeah,
Tim actually did contribute?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I knew Tim a little bit before.
You did.
He came on, so...
Yeah, you were the one who brokered that relationship. In fact, it's a crazy little story because you did some work with him and then told Brett that, Brett, you know, you got to have this guy for Rethink. And then Brett called him on April 1st and invited him to Rethink. And he's always looked up to the Stand to Reason crowd. And when he heard that he had an invitation to do Rethink from somebody called who identified himself as Brett Kunkel on April 1st, he thought it was an April Fool's joke. He really did. But anyway,
well,
that's...
Knowing Brett, he had good reason to be suspicious anyways.
But it was legit, and of course he's a great, fabulous, godly talent, and he's made a fabulous contribution through Stand to Reason so far, and I didn't know he was in the Student Apologetics Bible, so that's great. Amy Hall, also one of our bloggers, so that's great. It just gives, I think, folks familiar with Stand to Reason an idea of the quality of contributors to that study Bible. So I have in front of me the standard apologetic study Bible, not the student one. Are both of them being re-released now with new material, or just the apologetics study Bible?
Yeah, both of them are. And one thing that changed is originally they had the HC, the Holman Christian Standard Bible.
Yeah.
Now Broadman Holman updated the translation to the CSB. So the new student version and the non-student version. I'm not going to call it an adult version.
Right.
The non-student version.
Yeah, that would be awkward.
The CSB in it, but they're both updated in different ways.
Okay,
yeah.
This is the Holman Christian Standard Bible. I was going to ask about that, you know, whenever I see a new translation, I always wonder, why do we need a new translation? What was their thinking on this?
Well, I think Lifeway, for one, wanted to have their own translation with some of their own scholars, which makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's ultimately kind of a hybrid between NIV and the NASB.
Mm-hmm.
So some translations are word for word, some translations are thought for thought,
mm-hmm.
and there's strengths and weaknesses in both of those approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the CSB, they kind of said, let's go back between the two, depending on which most accurately and smoothly translates the original intentions of the author.
Okay.
And then I think they were just saying, we've got a lot of good scholars here, and we want to create another excellent translation. And I haven't read all of it yet. That would be disingenuous if I said I've gone back through the whole Bible and read it in the CSB. But from what I have read, I think it's very readable, and I think it's accurate. I think it's a very good translation.
Well, they also have the advantage, then, of packaging their new translation with this study Bible, for the apologetic study Bible format. And that, I don't think there is another apologetic study Bible out there, is there?
There's a few other study Bibles, like Lee Strobel has kind of a Case for Christ apologetic study Bible.
Okay, I didn't
know about
that.
There's one that Ray Comfort did a few years ago.
Okay.
But there's none that I think are as exhaustive and careful. And really what you said earlier is one of my favorite things about this study Bible is that we're using so many people that are bloggers, writers, speakers, a host of different ministries. I mean, it's really a work of the body of Christ, the people who love apologetics and people who love students.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them have recognizable names like yourself, the Stand to Reason guys. My dad has an article. But then there's some other people who are just having a great ministry to students, haven't had a chance to publish yet. They do great work, and they made a real, genuine, special contribution to this project. So it's just neat to see so many people come together and pitch into this, you know, this study Bible.
Sure. Yeah, and it also, because you have two different study Bibles, you have the standard study Bible and then you have the student edition, you have two different approaches. I mean, I'm looking at the standard one right now, and I'm looking at your authors, for example, and you've got J.P. Moreland here, you got Dave Horner, you've got your dad, Josh, Norm Geisler, I mean, Ravi Zacharias, Doug Groteis, Paul Copan. These are people that have been in play for a while, and they've made their contribution, and a lot of folks are going to recognize their names, okay? But then you have names like Bruce Ware, who's a significant theological player, but a lot of people aren't going to be aware of that name. Or Walter Bradley, who's been around for, you know, decades and decades and decades, and especially in Old Testament issues, you know. Or Wynn Cordruan, Walt Russell from the Biola, you know, there is such a fabulous Greg Gansel, who is a philosopher who wrote one of my favorite books on thinking about God. But a lot of folks don't know about him, yet he's able to make his contribution in a whole range of different articles. I'm just looking at the introduction here, the list of articles. There are all kinds of fabulous articles that in the I almost said adult version, in the standard. The standard. We can say the grown-up version. How about that? I don't know if that's
the
better.
Grown-up version.
Yeah. but the non-Fohawk version. they're going to get a very, very rich, thoroughgoing kind of academic though accessible analysis. And then for the crowd that doesn't want to go that deep, they want them more punchy stuff, more to the point, more kind of accessible and sharp and bang, 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 bang. Then the student apologetics Bible is going to be better for them because they can move more quickly. They don't have to ponder so long, but they're going to get substantive nuggets by this whole host of communicators that understand how to do student apologetics.
I think that's a good way to look at it. In fact, even though we call this Student Apologetics Study Bible, we thought about the word teen for a while, and I thought, that's going to limit it.
Yeah.
So in some sense, everybody thinks of themselves as a student, or at least they should.
Right, right.
So I was in Starbucks, this is probably a year, year and a half ago, and I walked in, I noticed a lady kind of made eye contact with me. I looked down, she had the study Bible.
No kidding.
And she was reading it, and I couldn't help but walk up. I said, where'd you get this? She goes, well, I have junior high kids. This is written totally on my level. I have these questions.
Uh-huh.
I'm a student. I do my daily devotions here with a study Bible. And I've heard that over and over again from people who just may not have the philosophical or academic depth background,
right,
but have real questions. And especially in the student study Bible, we have people who write this who are really working with this generation.
Mm-hmm.
They have a heart for this generation, and they know how to explain things with illustrations that stick.
Yeah.
That are just helpful practically. So student is broader than just teenagers. It's really anybody who wants to go deeper and understand apologetics.
Yeah, that's right. Did you happen to tell her that you were part of this project, you had something to do with the publication, or did you just lay back?
You know what? She caught partly we caught eye contact because she had picked it up at an event I was speaking
at.
Oh,
so she recognized you. Okay.
She recognized me.
Right, right. Yep. Okay. So I'm just waiting for the, you know, when I'm on an airplane, this has never happened to me, but I'm just waiting for the time when I'm walking down the aisle and I see somebody pouring over tactics or relativism or the story of reality, you know, and then I'm going to start quizzing them about the book, you know, just
That's
for
awesome.
Fun. But, yeah, I mean, I'm having so much fun anticipating it, you know, right now. It probably will never happen, but, you know, that's a writer's fantasy, right, to stumble upon somebody else reading your own book. I'll sign that for you if you want. Really? Why? Because I wrote it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm talking with Sean McDowell right now, and we are at the moment talking about the re-release or the updated version of both the Apologetic Study Bible for grown-ups, maybe, that, well, let's just see, it's the more kind of academic approach, and also the Apologetic Study Bible for the student edition, which is for anybody who's a student, regardless of your age. It's just a little bit more accessible. We'll be back with Sean in just a moment. We have a lot more things to talk about. I'm Greg Kokel, and this is Stand to Reason.
Are you wondering where to get started as an ambassador for Christ? We've put together a fresh approach to help you grow in knowledge, wisdom, and character. Go to str.org, follow the Start Here link under Training. You'll find fun videos, informational resources, and key articles. The more you train, the better you can engage others with confidence, courage, and grace. Don't miss the quiz at the bottom of the page where you can test the skills you've learned as an ambassador for Christ. Simply follow the Get Started link under the training section at the top of the webpage at str.org.
Whether we realize it or not, everyone has a worldview. It's your set of beliefs about the way the world actually is. It's your picture of reality. And this belief system helps you answer the big questions of life. Where did I come from? What's wrong with the world? Is there a solution? Why am I here? So what you believe about the world determines how you live in the world. Your worldview has consequences. It will shape how you understand law, politics, race, gender, morality, and even science. That's why I'm excited to invite you to join me and a host of other speakers at this year's Rethink Apologetics Conference happening at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa on September 22nd and 23rd, 2017. Let's get equipped and rethink how you see the world by visiting rethinkapologetics.com and registering today.
Greg Kokel back with you here, giving you a piece of my mind with my buddy Sean McDowell, who is a professor of Christian apologetics at Biola. Are you in the grad program there or the undergrad, or are they using you both across across schools, basically?
I only teach graduate programs in the MA apologetics program. Okay. Someday I'll do undergrads, but haven't done any yet.
They haven't borrowed you yet, huh?
No.
You know, I noticed I mentioned that one of your writers here was Greg Gansel. Did I get it right that Greg is on a faculty now at Biola?
Greg is on faculty now. And in fact, I'll give him a little plug. He has a new book out now called Our Deepest Desires.
Yes,
IVP Academic.
I just got it. He sent an email to me, said it came out, and I said, send us a copy and we'll have him on the air. But I have not even opened it. I just saw it. I put it in my bag today.
Greg is fantastic.
Wow.
It is really, really good. It's one I'm thrilled about. I'm doing an interview with him. I'm going to release on my blog later this week, but your listeners would love to hear from him on some very unique insights he's learned from working at Yale and other places,
right,
with this younger generation, just how to do apologetics.
Yeah, he used to be with, I think, Rivendell Institute or something like that. I'm thrilled that he's over at Biola now. I like Greg a lot. And you know what? Here's a little secret. When I wrote Tactics, I used to sit down with Greg's book, Thinking About God, and I used to read a couple of pages because I liked his writing style so much, and it was somewhat kin to mine, but there was a certain slow-down pace to it that was really accessible and really easy to read, and I thought, I want to get that you know, built into me a little bit more. So I'd read Greg Gansel a little bit to kind of internalize the rhythm a bit, and then I'd start doing my own wordsmithing on tactics. It turned out that Greg was one of the first guys to review tactics when it came out. He reviewed it for Philosophia Christi, and he gave it really high marks.
<That's awesome.
laughs> So I cornered him when I saw him next time. I said, you know, you were kind of reviewing your own style here. You know, I told him the story. I also saw that somewhere that Paul Nelson was on board, associated with the Discovery Institute and the intelligent design movement. Is he actually on campus, or is he just kind of adjunct, or how does that work?
So for our students, we have the opportunity, as you know, of doing weekend classes. So they'll come and they'll take tactics. I'm teaching a class with Alan Schliemann at the end of September on the Bible and homosexuality. So people can take these weekend classes, or they come out for the residency for 2 weeks, which is in June. And that's where Paul will come out and teach 3 days on intelligent design every year for us. And always does a great job.
Yeah, he's been around for a long, long time making contributions. In fact, people might see him in the Illustra Media films that deal with the whole, you know, what amounts to irreducible complexity, the incredibly complex nature of different aspects of the natural realm, whether it's flight or whether it's the metamorphosis with butterflies and the like. And Paul's always featured there. And I saw in the titles stuff that he was associated with Biola now. So you guys are just building. I'm really continue to increase your stature as a world-class enterprise, especially in the area of apologetics. So I'm just thrilled that and Jay Warner Wallace is on with you guys now as adjunct, and of course you're on the regular faculty. So I just have the highest regard for what Craig and the whole and JP and his program and everybody's doing there. I tell people that Biola's a true blue. You can count on them, you know, to make the right decisions when push comes to shove on theological and cultural issues. So thankfully, there's fewer and fewer like that anymore. And I'm glad for myself to be associated with that school and you as well. Hey, let me ask you a question just about the trends right now, Sean. You're actually much more in touch with these things than even I am. And that is the I know that when you put out a new edition of the Apologetic Study Bible and the student version of the Apologetic Study Bible, and partly it is to kind of begin to address some things that weren't such a big deal 5 or 10 years ago, but now are getting more front and center, that as defenders of the faith, we have to be able to understand and respond to. Can you give me a couple of those issues that you think are like that?
I'm glad you asked this question. Anytime you do a second version of a book, you get to include material that you just wanted to, that you didn't for whatever reason.
Right.
So, for example, we added a chapter by our friend Andy Steiger on what does God think about tattoos, which was really fun. And then added one, should Christians support euthanasia? Scott Klusendorf wrote that.
Wow.
So we added a few that aren't so much new issues, but the moment it came out, I was like, man, why didn't I, for students, have a talk on worldview and tattoos?
Right.
Well, also, since 2010, there's been a host of new issues that have come out. So here's some of the ones. I think there's probably 8 or 10 new ones that we included. One, of course, is the transgender question.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Dallas did a marvelous article on that.
Right.
We added an article, How Do I Defend Religious Freedom?
Hmm.
That wasn't really an issue on people's radar in 2010. Amy Hall wrote a wonderful chapter, Are Singles Condemned to a Life of Loneliness?
Oh.
That's a big question that people are asking.
Yeah.
Adam Kingston, a friend of mine, wrote one on Does God Care About Racial Issues? Now, of course, we've had racial issues, you know, forever in America.
Right.
But it's kind of brimmed to the surface more. How do you make an apologetics for that?
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine who also went to Biola. He's a pastor. Wrote an article on the reason for justice. Mm-hmm. So how do you make a case for social justice? And I realize that word has some baggage with it.
Yeah, I cringe a little bit when I hear it. You know, here's a Dennis Prager says something really, I think, helpful here, although I can understand the reason why somebody would want to use it, because it is the kind of the term of art right now. But he said anytime you add an adjective to the word justice, you corrupt justice. You corrupt it, you know. And whether it's sexual justice or social justice or racial justice or whatever, maybe wouldn't justice just be adequate by itself? But in any event, I talked to Dan Kimball about this a little bit because he used the term in some of his writing. He says, look, this is the language of the culture right now, and so we're going to flow with that and then try to rehabilitate it a little bit. I thought that was a good point. That's probably what you have in mind.
I think that is. So we actually took the term social out of it, and the article is just called The Reason for Justice.
Oh, good.
So for some of the reasons that you mentioned, but we felt like, gosh, you know, Christians, we do care about the environment. We do care about justice issues. Let's make an apologetic for this. We added one on, you know, how should a Christian respond to Islamic Jihad? And our dear brother Nabil wrote a chapter on that and just did a wonderful, insightful chapter on that one. And then Tom Gilson wrote one, Can You Be Gay and Christian?
Right.
So these are questions people weren't really asking, you know, since 2010. But you can also see we're not afraid of the sticky questions.
Right.
I get asked these questions all the time, and we have to be ready with an answer. And it's not like each one of these articles, we completely solve it. It's not that simple. But just sometimes talking about it, bringing biblical principles, laying out the boundaries, gives people a confidence to approach some of these thorny issues in a gracious but in a truthful manner.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these, I've been writing them down as you're talking about them, the transgender religious freedom, racial issues, justice, jihad, gay Christians. I mean, these are flashpoint issues.
Yeah.
These are just, these are the kinds of things where it's very difficult to even enter into a discussion without people being right on the edge of being angry. You know, and I've noticed, and I think what this means then for a lot of Christians is it is understandable that they just don't go there. And if they don't go there, then that means the other guy, the other idea gets to occupy that territory unopposed. Okay. And I can understand the lack of courage to move forward. And I've always held that one of the most important things to build courage is to just be properly schooled in an issue. If you don't know what to say and you don't understand the issue and you don't know how to respond to the rhetorical challenges, you're going to be silent. You're scared. You don't want to look foolish. But when you have a thoughtful, organized thing to say in response, a question to ask, a pushback in a good way, generously offered, wow, that really ups your courage, your willingness to engage.
You know, Greg, one of the things I love to do when I speak, and obviously Brett's great at this, Tim does this, it's kind of my atheist role play.
And oh, yeah,
youth groups of 10 students, I've done it in a stadium of 6,000 students and everywhere in between. And consistently, people tend to get defensive, angry, hostile, you know, all those kind of negative words, at least once I push back 15, 20 minutes into it. And I always ask people, I'll say, why do you think you got defensive? I'll say, maybe it's because you really don't know what you believe and why you believe it. Maybe when someone starts pressing you, why does God allow evil? What about genocide in the Old Testament? What about contradictions of the Bible and you haven't thought about it? It's human nature to get defensive.
Right.
But when we know what we believe and why, there's a certain calmness and confidence and conviction that comes with it.
Yeah. You know, when Brett, I've only done this a couple of times. Brett, of course, has done it many times. But he has mentioned to me that when he does this with adults, he sometimes gets a much more vicious response than with students, you know, which this is not a good sign.
Well, I think adults feel like they're supposed to have the answers.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done this with teachers. I've done this with pastors. Students feel like maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. They just push back with youthful zest and kind of go for
it. Right, right.
But the older we are, sometimes people even feel a little bit shamed. Like, gosh, I'm 30, 40, 60, and I don't know the answer to this. So of course, my goal is not to embarrass or shame people, to challenge them and say, gosh, you got to take these questions seriously.
Yeah, I think that, that you're onto something there, and younger people can say, well, I'm just a younger person. I just haven't covered that ground yet, and so I just don't know all the stuff, so I can kind of say what I could say, but nobody expects me to have all the answers. But adults have been around longer, you know, and I can see why they'd be more liable to be defensive if they don't have the right answers there. One thing that really encourages me about all of this stuff, and it's something you know well, is that we have a very deep bench.
Yeah.
You know, I think back on when I was a pup, you know, in the Jesus movement, there was your dad. Norm Geisler was around then. John Montgomery was around then. John Montgomery has made contributions here, I noticed, in the Apologetic Study Bible. And he'll be on the air here in about 3 weeks. I'll have him in studio with me talking about the Reformation. But so that's three. Then you had Walter Martin, and then you had Francis Schaeffer. I mean, there were just five players. Now, C.S. Lewis was obviously the background, but he's from across the pond. But those were the five players. We had really good A string, and we had nobody on the bench.
Right.
Right? And now, because of the contribution of people like your dad and the other four that I mentioned, three of them still in vigorous play right now, guys like me and J.P. Moreland and Bill Craig and you and a whole bunch of other people, we have been able to take advantage of the teaching and training that they gave us, and now begin to make our own contribution, and creating a massive field. Isn't it amazing the explosion in the last 20 years, Sean, of these kinds of things that we're talking about? The availability of good instruction and books and tapes and videos and websites and all solid stuff.
I was talking with my dad about that a while ago when we were working on the Evidence Project. Just, you know, how different is it now? There's so many more resources we have to update evidence. There was nothing when you first wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he goes, you know, when issues used to come up in culture for like 2 decades, everybody would look to me to answer it. He goes, it's so nice that people say, well, what does Craig think? What does Bill Craig think? What does J. Warner Wallace think? What does Lee Strobel think? And it's just such a powerful testament to what you said, that people, yeah, you know, and even like J. Warner Wallace will say, it's not that everybody needs a big name or a radio show or a platform,
uh-huh,
but there's so many people just working where they are, making a difference.
Yeah, the way he puts it is, we don't need another $1 million apologist, we need a $1 million apologist.
And that's right. Yeah, I mean, when
great.
I get to travel at conferences, I met a fellow friend of mine, Bill, who will be at CIA this week, you'll meet him, and he's kind
right.
of the youth ministry apologist for the state of Arkansas.
Oh, I'll see you. You'll be there?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good, because Jay Warner and I and Craig, this is the Cross-Exam Instructor Academy, and our audience knows all about it, but that's this week, and I'm getting on a plane, the O-Dark 30 tomorrow morning, and heading out. Well, that's right. I'll probably see you on, tomorrow's Wednesday. I'll see you on Thursday morning, because I got a dinner plans tomorrow with a donor. But,
okay.
Oh, that's great. I hadn't connected the dots here, so we'll be hanging out in a day or two. Well, that's great, but I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. You know, you're in your 60s, so sometimes those connections, I'm just kidding. I knew you'd laugh at that. Do the same thing to my dad, and he also hasn't missed a beat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyways, this fellow we're going to meet, Bill, he's like the apologist for the state of Arkansas in youth ministry.
Wow.
So he travels around, he's put together curriculum using your stuff, some of my stuff. I didn't even know that he existed, and I see somebody putting feet to this, just making a difference where he's at, changing lives.
Yeah.
And I tell him, I go, my goodness, what you're doing is just as important as what I'm doing. It's just different. We have different opportunities. We're all in this together.
Right. You know, I wrote about this concept once, and I talked about the five guys that kind of were in what I call the first column, and then the second column, guys like JP and Bill, and, you know, we've got organizations now that we built. And then the third column, the way I characterize them, is these people just penetrating culture all over the place. I mean, thousands upon thousands of faithful ambassadors for Christ. And I was in Chicago about 5 or 6 years ago now, I guess, and I spoke for this men's group called the Pinnacle something or other. It's captains of industry, businessmen, and I'd never even heard of them before. And I got to speak at their breakfast at 6 a.m. on Friday, you know, in Chicago. But there was fabulous opportunity. And then they told me, we have a Pinnacle Forum, I think that's what it was called, in each of the 50 largest cities in the country. Man, my jaw dropped. And here's what it taught me, Sean, and it was what the point you were just making, is that God is at work all over the world. And we have such a small perspective. We have our little fraternity of friends and people that we work with that we know about. But there are all kinds of things that God is doing in all kinds of places, like this gentleman here in Arkansas that you just mentioned, that are these operations, these enterprises that are flourishing under the power of the Holy Spirit and faithful people who are taking their tasks and blooming where they're planted. And it's happening all over the world. It's awesome.
Oh, my goodness. I just get goosebumps thinking about it. And well, especially now, even given how many people you mentioned weighing in, when we look around us, it feels like the questions and challenges are getting even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we need all hands on deck and everybody, big or small, just to make the contribution that they can.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned something earlier. You mentioned Tom Gilson's name and his work regarding homosexuality, which is excellent. We've had him on the show before. But Tom mentioned once that there is not a single challenge that has been raised against the Christian worldview, Christianity, the Bible, Jesus, Christian ethics, whatever. There's not a single challenge that we have not been able to answer in spades.
Wow.
The issue is delivery, that is getting the message out. That's the big issue. And that goes to the whole issue of how deep our bench is. And, of course, you're one of the people of our deep bench here. Sean McDowell, my guest. He is part of the fabulous project of the Apologetic Study Bible and the student version, both now being re-released from Holman. In updated versions. Sean, when we get back, we're going to talk about the Advocates Bible Study, okay?
And, you got it.
And we'll get an idea of what that project is all about. I'm Greg Kokel. Stay with us.
There's always something new for you on the STR.org homepage, where you'll find sound analysis and careful commentary on the issues challenging Christians today. Along with new articles each month from Greg, Alan, and Tim, you'll also find new blog posts every day, new podcasts each week, new featured resources each month, and news about upcoming events. So take a few moments to browse the STR.org homepage and see what's new today. And keep coming back to stay informed and encouraged as you grow as a Christian ambassador. Stop by today and every day at STR.org.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come and speak at a location near you? Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To schedule Greg, Alan, or Tim, send an email to Melinda or Darcy. To learn more, visit str.org/training/speakers.
Greg Kokel here, and chatting with my buddy and my guest, Sean McDowell, about some projects that he's been involved in. I'm just curious, Sean. I mean, looking at this stuff, it's all done. You got a bunch more stuff in the hopper?
You know, I have a few more things that are coming up, yes.
I mean, I'm the kind of guy, I don't want to put pen to paper unless I got something that, I mean, it's so hard for me to write and whatever. I got like a couple of books in me, and I'll just put these out. Hopefully they last for a long time, and you just keep cranking out this good material, Sean, meeting the need. That's just fabulous. I am a little curious, though. Now you've got a couple of things. What else can you possibly say that you haven't written on yet?
Oh, that is a great question. I uh, I guess in the hopper, I have three things I'm working on with Eric Johnson at the Mormon Research Ministry.
Huh.
We're compiling a book right now that Jay Werner and Brett and Mark Middleberg have written contributions for, just sharing the good news with Mormons.
Huh.
And it's just a lot of people who have practical strategies for reaching out to Mormons who maybe have not had a platform to get those ideas out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a host of real practical methods, whether it's Brett's mission trips, Jim's kind of case approach to Mormonism, et cetera. So that's one project. And then Jay Werner and I are going to, we're starting to write a book in the spring on reaching the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to combine student ministry with apologetics for teachers, pastors, parents, just with some real practical ideas to work these things out in your family, in your church, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually down the road, I want to do Fate of the Apostles, kind of a lay version.
Right.
So that's probably a couple years down the road.
That was your PhD work, and then you made a popular piece out of it, but you want to kind of youthitize it a little bit more or something.
Yeah, well, the Fate of the Apostles was with... now it's with Routledge Press.
Uh-huh.
It was a 350-page academic book. Even though it's pretty readable, I want to kind of trim it up and maybe do a More Than a Carpenter, the Story of a Reality-length version to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I like that reference. Thank you. Who was I talking to? I was talking to Justin Brierley last week here on the air from Unbelievable, and in his new book with the same title. Has a chapter titled "Living the something like Living the Story of Reality," and I asked him about that, and he said kind of sheepishly, "Yeah, I kind of borrowed that." And I said, "Fine with me, you know, that's great." Okay, let's talk about the Advocates Bible Study Discussion Guide and Leader's Guide. I am actually almost completely unfamiliar with this material. I mean, I opened it up and I paged through it, and you got all kinds of fabulous. It's a hands-on kind of study thing, and it looks really great. But why don't you just walk us through an introduction to what you're trying to do and how this whole project works, how it started, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so essentially this project is just the result of a dream come true for me, to be honest, for something I have for years have wanted to do, but just haven't had the funds or the opportunity to do it, which is to create a year-long, systematic, careful, top-quality apologetics curriculum for students, typically in churches or small groups or even Christian schools can use it, where we just step-by-step build and have the best editors, the best footage for the movies that we created, a graphic artist, et cetera. So it's essentially, and I don't know, I don't think there's anything else out there like it, it's a one-year program walking students through what they need to know in apologetics and how to apply it. Now, Awana, I'm sure most of your listeners will be familiar with Awana.
Right.
They're known for kind of Bible studies and discipleship and kids' Bible memory, but they have a massive international reach and a huge student ministry.
Wow.
And they came to me a few years ago and said, hey, we're thinking about redoing all of our student ministry. First year is on kind of Discipleship 101 with Josh Griffin, who used to be at Saddleback. He's with Download Youth Ministry now. The second year, we want to do Worldview and Apologetics. Would you partner with us? And instantly, I thought, are you kidding me? I love Awana. What they do is remarkable. This is something I've wanted to do. They're putting amazing resources into this.
Yeah.
So we sat down, Greg. This has been about as much work, probably close to evidence and my dissertation, as anything I've ever done.
Wow.
We sat down with curriculum developers, with marketers, with writers, and just said, all right, we've got 32 lessons. What do we need to cover? When do we need to cover it? How are we going to cover it? What's going to be in the video? What's going to be in the kind of Bible study for the week, kind of the one-page content? Where are we going to film this? And just started asking all these questions and spent hour after hour after hour refining this thing so it would just be as good and honoring to God as possible.
So this is a video product as well, or that's the core of it, and the workbooks are meant to supplement the video. Is that the idea?
Yeah, so it's 32 lessons, which would be 32 weeks, and it's systematic and builds from what apologetics is to how you actually live it and apply it at the end.
Right.
And each week I created say, a video somewhere between maybe 6 minutes and sometimes 12 or 15 minutes where I would teach on that content. So each week there's one video, and then daily there's just different exercises. Like one day we wrote a Bible study on a passage of Scripture that relates to that topic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one page, you know, 300-400 words in length,
mm-hmm.
where they can study the Scriptures and understand how it relates to that topic. And then throughout the rest of the week, it's activities, it's discussion questions, and then even a guide for youth leaders on, say, Wednesday night to come together
mm-hmm.
and teach the students through this topic.
Well, is this out now? I'm looking at mine, and it's got a kind of a plain cover, which is a little misleading because when you open it up, you have all this graphic explosion, this great layout, all this, you know, the pictures, and with every study, you have a book that you recommend that people read that, you know, that will help. And here's Ethics, in fact, which is a book that you wrote a few years back. To supplement the study, so a new kind of apologist, this, you know, you did that one, and relational apologetics, hell under fire. I'm just looking, I'm paging through it right now. So is this available now that they can purchase it, or did I get an advanced copy here?
Well, you got an early copy, about as early as it could come out, but people can actually purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is we've completed the first videos and already released them online, so somebody could start the study right now.
I see.
But we're still completing and releasing the later videos. They'll come out in subsequent weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at the table of contents. So you start, like you said, with the basics, and here are the title: Apologetics, Faith, Truth, Logic. That looks like the first set of things. You're laying a good foundation. Then you talk about worldview, naturalism, pantheism, and monotheism. And so again, now you're building a second tier on that foundation. Then you go to more particular: science, universe, DNA, designer. That's on the whole science side.
Yep.
Then you've got morality, beauty, agency, and story. And then miracles, resurrection, deity. You can just see how you're just building one week upon the other and getting finally love, questions, doubt, challenges is the last one. Of course, the section on evil, section on the Bible and prophecy and archaeology and biblical authority. I mean, it's just all here.
Well, so essentially, the first unit you mentioned is, what is apologetics, what is faith, what is truth, do we use our mind, like laying the foundation.
Uh-huh.
Then the next one, we look at, what is a worldview, what are different worldviews, naturalism, pantheism, monotheism.
And by the way, that's what you're going to be doing for us at Rethink in Orange County coming up in September, as I recall.
That's exactly right. Some of this common material we develop, I'll be translating over.
Yep,
yeah. Great point. And then in the third section, we start to ask, could one of these worldviews be true? How would we know? So the science tells us there's a mind, there's a designer, there's an information giver.
Right.
And then we move to this fourth one, which is my favorite. And frankly, when we first talked about this, I remember Jeremy Pettit, one of the key people at Awana, we looked at each other like, do you think we could pull this off with students? And I said, we got to try, because typically apologetics curriculum and books don't have material on this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we called signpost to God. So we just established that there's a mind, there's a designer in the world. Now we're saying, is there further purpose? What could we know about this designer?
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the moral law, so we can know that the moral lawgiver, that morality comes from a moral lawgiver.
Right.
Then we look at beauty and how there's objective beauty in the world, and that points towards a divine artist. We look at agency, the existence of free will,
right,
which points towards a mind who freely chose to create us. And then we look at, perhaps my favorite one is story.
Mm.
And we talk about how, as human beings, when we get together, what do? We tell stories. That's what we do. Campaigns are stories. Commercials are stories. Books are stories.
Mm-hmm.
Our life is a story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what worldview best explains that we so see the world through this story lens? Well, not Darwinism.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we see the world as a story because we're part of a story,
mm-hmm.
and God is an author.
Well, you know, I have a title that just came to mind that might be helpful at this particular section. just a thought, you know.
Exactly. You know exactly where this is going.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what's cool about this, Greg, is we spent so much time where we actually filmed these.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when we did the one on Story, we went up to Saddleback and they let us use one of their stadiums where the students meet, and it looks like a movie theater. So I'm talking, holding popcorn, and it looks like I'm talking about Story from within a movie theater.
Oh, I know that I know where that facility is. Yeah, that's great.
And then we do the one on beauty. I go to a rose garden. We did the one on monotheism. We are on top of a mountain up at Forest Home. We do naturalism. I'm on the beach by the water. We did hell. We drove up to the high desert.
Yeah.
So it looks like I'm just barren, loneliness, loss. I mean, each one of we did pantheism in the forest because there's this idea that the forest is alive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was traveling all over the place.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, all these small details matter and help kids develop a worldview.
Right. We're really close to being out of time here. I want you to be able to tell our audience how they can get this and begin to employ it. Do you employ it as a group? Do you need a study leader? Where can it be purchased? Is it web-based? I mean, the videos, or do they have to purchase that? How does that work? We got 2 minutes.
Well, the videos are web-based. They can get a study guide, they can get the full packet, or they can get a simpler one to use for themselves with a student. There's a leader guide.
Right.
The videos can all be streamed.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the easiest way is if you just Google McDowell Awana or McDowell Advocates, this curriculum will come up, and you'll see all the different options.
Mm-hmm.
But it's available. It's easy to use. And one of the things I tell people is you don't have to be an expert to take students through this. We've actually had a ton of adults, more than I suspected, already get this curriculum, and they've said, we kind of want to learn this stuff ourselves.
Right.
So if you want to learn this stuff, grab a bunch of students. You don't have to be the expert.
Right.
Take them through it, just like I did with the True You series by
Focus
on the Family
right.
a few years ago. I'm watching that with my students going, man, I'm learning stuff. I think people who use this will walk away and feel the same.
Well, you know, the idea of having a turnkey program, so to speak, that allows leaders, parents, Bible study leaders, youth group leaders to just grab the thing and get it moving, kind of plug and play, so to speak. I think this is fabulous, and it's going to get so many more people involved. And here we have the Bible study book. Spiral Bound is the one I have, and this is for the students to go through. And then there's the discussion guide that can be used and the leader's guide that can instruct the leaders about how to do this. It's just really straightforward. And if you go to that website or if you Google McDowell Advocate, no, Awana is what you said, right?
Yep, McDowell, Awana, and Advocates is the name. I think that'll come up too.
Yeah.
You'll find it easily.
Yeah.
Can't miss it.
And, well, what a fabulous contribution you're making to the body of Christ and equipping them to stand tall against the schemes of the devil, and those schemes are all around us, you know that. And I just have appreciated our friendship and having just working together, and I'll see you in 2 days over in Dallas. That's going to be a lot of fun. And, man, it's just one of the best things to be able to be involved in this enterprise, isn't it, Sean, to be able to show people why it is entirely reasonable. Here's the way I put it. The smart money's on Jesus.
Well, I think that's right. And I want to tell you, Greg, when people ask me who the key players that influenced my life, obviously my dad comes up, JP, Bill, Craig, and you are always towards the top. So I've told you that, but I'm a huge fan, huge friend.
Thank you.
And look forward to hanging this week.
Okay, I do too. Thank you, Sean. God keep you.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, bye-bye now. Dr. Sean McDowell, the only PhD I know with a faux hawk. All right, that's it for this hour, friends. Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven this week. Bye-bye now.
Listening to Stand to Reason. Listen to a new one-hour podcast every Wednesday and Friday Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by giving a gift online at str.org.